The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
It's
the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting for 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to a very wet and rainy Northern California Sunday afternoon. This is the last Sunday of the year for the Space Show in 2021, and we're glad that you are spending it with us. And we have a great show because one of our favorites, going back to the beginning of the Space Show, Leonard David, is with us. More about that in just a minute. We'll be doing the full show today. But that's no excuse not to watch the time of the show. So if you want to get an email in or a phone call to Leonard, you got to do it while we're still on air. And the phone number, 1-866-687-7223, and email drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. After today, we don't have any additional planned Space Show programs until Sunday, which will be 2022, and that will be an open line show. However, usually I do a Space Show, you know, prediction and sort of look ahead and what's everybody's forecast show. We didn't really do that this year. And if there's demand for it, I will put in a show for Wednesday evening or Thursday evening of this week for your forecast and predictions. But you got to let me know if you want to do that, because it's no fun to do it if you're not calling the show and going out on a limb and making predictions. So you do that by either emailing me or posting on the blog for this show saying you want us to add that program and which night you prefer, Wednesday or Thursday. There's no Hotel Mars this week. There's no show on Friday because for most everybody, it is already New Year's Eve, even though we're a morning show. So we're back again January 2nd, 2022, with open lines. All of our newsletters for the week are published and up on the website. All of our programs are archived. You know that. You might still be interested in something from our Space Show store, even though Christmas is over with. You get there by clicking on Pepper, listening to the Space Show. And, of course, as always, we make an appeal for supporting the Space Show. So if you're planning to support the Space Show, or if you've never thought about doing it, but you are open-minded and will think about it now, and if the tax deduction is available and of interest to you, because we are a 501c3 nonprofit with One Giant Leap Foundation, you have, counting to today, 6 days left to donate for your tax deduction for 2021. If you don't care about the tax deduction, then you actually have longer to consider donating. But we hope you will donate during our appeal, which ends midnight on the 31st. And there's a lot of good reasons why you should be supporting the Space Show, and I'm posting comments about it and asking for your support all the time. But if you're a listener and if you like the program, if it's entertaining, if you learn something from it, if you get angry from it and it gets your blood boiling one way or the other, you should be supporting us, and we hope that you do. We are a nonprofit. There's easy ways to support us through PayPal up at the top of our homepage, Zelle, if your bank does Zelle QuickPay. And our email address for Zelle is david@onegiantleapfoundation.org. Or you can mail a check to 1 ONE Giant Leap Foundation, and it mails to Box 95, Tiburon, T-I-B, as in boy, U-R-O-N, California, 94920. Also, I want to point out that an organization called FeedSpot, F-E-E-D-S-P-O-T, .com, this is a blog, has rated the space show the number 7 out of 20 top 20 space exploration podcasts on the web. Now, we're really not a podcast. We're a live radio show, and we archive in podcast format, but I'm not going to split hairs. So it's an honor to be number 7 out of 20. I don't know a lot about blog.feedspot.com, but I appreciate that they picked us as number 7 out of 20, and hopefully we can be number 1 next year. I will put the URL for FeedSpot in the archive summary of this show. I've already been doing that for the past couple of shows, so you can find them if you want to go see all 20 podcasts. I'm not going to read them on the air. I don't want to take the time for it. But we're number 7 out of 20 because of you, the listeners, and because of great guests that come on the show, like our guest today, Leonard David. If it was just me, talking about space, we probably wouldn't even be number 1,000 out of, a million. Who the hell knows? But we're number 7 because of you guys and gals, the listeners and the guests. And that's why I think everybody listening to this show should be supporting the space show. But hey, that's just me. But we do need your support, and your funding helps us go through 2022 with a strong broadcasting year, additional phone lines, and all of what we use to do a live broadcast show. So remember, 6 days counting today. PayPal at the top of our homepage. Zelle, if your bank does Zelle, to david@onegiantleapfoundation.org, or a check to One Giant Leap Foundation, as instructed in all of the fundraising appeals and in my commentary, and as also instructed on the PayPal notice on our homepage. We also do sponsors, and our sponsorship is not just for company messages. Maybe you have a lot to say, and maybe you have a blog and you have 100 subscribers. That's not very many people. But if you take your message and put it out as a banner ad on the homepage and then shorten it down to 1 minute so I can read it when I read sponsor messages, then you can reach thousands of people. And so sponsorship is also a billboard for your thoughts and your ideas and your creativity. So if you're interested in the billboard and company sponsorship for 2022, I have places available. We only do a few because when I read the messages, it digs into guest talk time, and I don't like to do that. So you need to email me at drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com, and I'll tell you about the different ways you can be a sponsor or use our plan for a billboard for your inner thoughts, deep dark secrets, and ideas on how to do things in space differently or better than the way we're doing them. And I do want to shout out to our current sponsors, Northrop Grumman, the Space Foundation, Astrox, AIAA, Moonwords, Celestis, and the National Space Society. We wouldn't be doing our show without these great sponsorship supporting contributions and messages. You can be one too. You can do your banner ad and change it whenever you want. You can change your message that I read whenever you want. And if you're interested, contact me, drspace@thespaceshow.com. So for today, our phone number is our toll-free phone number, 1-866-687-7223. And remember that our newsletter is up. All of the newsletters are up and running on our homepage. You can see them, and that will tell you our schedule for next week. But when you go to the website newsletter, scroll down, and you'll see all the programs scheduled through January. We're almost completely booked in January. We only have one January date available. And so we're booking the rest of the first quarter for 2022 already. Everything we do is archived. And again, we need your support, so don't dismiss that. If you like the space show, that's what's keeping us going, your support. So Leonard David is our guest today. Those of you that have listened to a few space shows, you know who Leonard is. He's an incredible journalist. He's a great author as well. And he's at space.com, but a lot of other places. His own website is Leonard David, so there's two D's in that, .com. And you can read about him. And we're glad to have Leonard back on the show for today. So rather than read about him, which would probably take me most of the first segment of the show, we'll just wish Leonard a very belated Merry Christmas and an upcoming Happy New Year. And Leonard, it's always great to talk to you, and welcome back to the Space Show.
Oh, it's great to be here. And again, every time I start talking, I go, thank you. Archives, the amount of attention you paid to the space program and all of its elements, the personalities and the real divergent viewpoints, what a treasure trove you've got locked in, not only for this year, but for years before. So thank you for doing that.
And hopefully 10 years for coming, and I guess if we're doing this in 2031, at the end of 2031, number one, will SLS have flown yet and still be in existence? Number two, will Starship have flown and made orbit? And will it be doing what it's claimed to be doing, both by Musk, but more in the name of all the space advocates and SpaceX fans, making claims for how it's going to change the world? So that's a 10-year out prediction, Leonard. what do you think?
Well, that's a good one. You know, one of the things that happened this year to me was, I mean, the big news story was space tourism. Great opportunities for people to fly suborbital and orbital. What an amazing year, this year alone. And having written about space tourism for so long, I almost was breathless. I mean, it was here. And I just, you know, it had little permutations that were different than I thought. But it was very impressive. So I guess I'm not answering your question because I'm not going to go there. I think, you know, I one of the things that I saw in my my Facebook and Twitter and my own website was kind of a weird reaction to Elon Musk being picked as Person of the Year. Or what do they call that thing?
Man of the Year or something like that. Or, well, I guess it would be Person of the Year, yeah.
Personality of the Year, whatever it was. I was surprised at the kind of negativity that people shot at me. I don't know what kind of audience you have, but it was an odd assortment of things. I think to start the SpaceX saga, and they've had an incredible year. What a run. All the launches with Falcon 9 from Kennedy and Vandenberg and landing all these first stages. Very, very impressive. And my only concern when we slip into the Starship Enterprise, which is just another amazing story from Elon, is I'm getting a little Pied Piper problem. You got to be careful of dreaming the dream too much. I'm glad it's there to dream, but I'm a little wary of some of the things that people build up around Elon. And I always worry, this is old me thinking, I was fortunate to meet Wernher von Braun a long time ago, and he was such a clarion call for how space is going to play out, and he's gone. He died. And, you know, the dream is gone for that guy. And I always worry about Lon that something's going to happen to him. And who picks up the mantle? Do we have any sense of who picks up Starship and moves it on? I'm not sure anybody's capable or willing to do that. I just don't know how that's set up.
Well, we have talked about SpaceX and Musk's succession before, but as far as I know, there's no hard data on it. You know, there is management at SpaceX, Gwen, and the rest of the crew that can probably run SpaceX and go forward with it, but they are not blessed with the attributes that have put Elon on such a big place on the map. But I will tell you, I have talked with, I'm going to say kids, but they're in their 30s. My kids' age, they're in their 30s. And there's a lot of people that I've met that really think Musk is ruining the planet. And I'm sort of aghast at this and surprised by this, but they say he's terrible with his you know, employment. Rockets are bad for everything. He doesn't pay his fair share of taxes, although he made a big deal out of cutting a check for $14.1 billion to the IRS. I was hoping that was to include a share of my fourth quarter taxes, but
yeah.
But I don't think I can make that claim. But yeah, there, and I've had people email me that are my age telling me that he's absolutely evil because of what he's doing to the planet and the environment.
Yeah.
I don't know how widespread any of this is. I was asked to do a couple of CNN all-night spots after the orbital Dragon flight and after the other two space tourism flights. And it was all negative toward the billionaires. And yeah, I've talked about that on the air. And I was going on Nouri's show, and I got terrible emails before the show about how evil all of this commercial space is, and we have no business in space. So there is a population out there.
But there is a business.
That doesn't like it.
Going.
And yeah. So I understand why there would be, what do you call it, complaints, you know, about that. I have a listener saying he can barely hear you. I have you cranked up really loud. So can you speak closer to the phone? And
I'm actually climbed into the phone.
Okay, well that's better. Just, you know, seat yourself there at the control.
Okay,
station.
Sorry.
Yeah, that,
yeah. Well,
I
think
better.
We got something going here. I think everybody should pipe in. You know. About Elon, and you know, he's a dream weaver, and you need those people. And,
oh, absolutely, and I'm very supportive of his being Person of the Year. And here's the deal. None of us are perfect human beings, and, I mean, we hear this all the time, and if you go to church or synagogue or something, you always hear we're flawed and all this. But we are all flawed, and there's nothing perfect about any of us, including yours truly, Dr. Space, and clearly on Musk, too. But he does a lot of really good things, and he blows it out a lot. And, you know, and he probably has a lot of habits or issues that maybe many of you out there don't have. And if you ever talk to his ex-wife, you'd probably get an earful.
Yeah, but I never met Howard Hughes either.
Yeah, you never met. That's right. And
yeah.
we could go down the line with all of this. So I think, you know, overall.
Tesla. I never met Tesla.
Yeah, and I think overall that Musk has made changes to the world and humanity for the better. And I'm very supportive of him. I wish I could get him back on the space show, but, you know, he hasn't been on for a number of years. He came on early when SpaceX wasn't what it is today, and he wasn't in such high demand. But, listen, I worry, too, about all the fans that are attributing everything to him, including the diamond mines of South Africa and the gold that's remaining in the Sierra Nevada.
I will say one thing about Elon that I really appreciate him doing, and that, you know, people wince over Twitters and all that stuff. He reminds me a little bit of another early entrepreneur, John Carmack with Armadillo.
Right.
I love these people that will tell you why it succeeded, why it failed.
They're transparent, yeah.
They're transparent, and I think they gain much more momentum by getting the public more engaged in their dream by, uh-oh, that didn't work. And, you know, Elon has already said if he has this orbital flight with the Starship next year, we all know how that can slip. And he's already said, don't get your expectations too high. But, you know, I think we all feel the pain in a lot of ways of a guy that's, again, I'm overusing Dreamweaver, but I guess that's a good term.
Well, so what's your take on Starship? You think it's going to live up to all the attributes and to the plans that everybody's making for it to really take off with commercial space and change the world?
Well, fine. I hope it happens before I drop over. You know, it's just let's do it. It all comes down to 3, 2, 1, and you push a button and something goes up in the air. And we'll see how well it works. And you know, we got other you got people want to ride the thing, do a circumlunar flight around the moon on Starship, and we've got, you know, NASA buying into the thing. To have Elon finally, after the Blue Origin SpaceX kind of debates, Elon's going to provide some kind of transportation to the moon. Okay, let's see it happen. Meanwhile, I just remember the original thing was about SLS, and you know I'm kind of in the camp. Maybe this is because I'm too old. NASA can do incredible things. I mean this team of people at, quote-unquote, the NASA government, space side, you can't count these people out. I want multiple launch vehicles. I don't care where they're coming from. NASA, Elon, back the other day, you know, with the Rocket Labs, we got Bezos looking at all these launchers, New Glenn and all these other things. That's where you want to be. I'm not being negative about any of them. Let's pray to God that they all succeed in some manner. And if anybody stumbles and doesn't come up to the bar, we got backup. I mean, at the end of the day, you're talking about long-term human civilization. It's a long-term kind of dream of Elon or others, multi-planet species, and, you know, we're going to Mars and beyond. So, you know, that's the goal. And, you know, if it's somebody with a giant rubber band slingshot that has a new idea, I'm up for it. Go. Make it happen. Get some entrepreneurial money and go forward. So.
Well, let me ask you your take then on Artemis and this idea that it's going to falter, and therefore let's get Musk to do Lunar Direct.
Yeah, well, okay. I'm saying anybody's faltering yet. Let's fly. It's a fly-off. I mean, okay, fire the damn things, and let's see where NASA is going to come down on the SLS, and let's see where Elon is going to be. Let's see where Bezos is going to be, and that's probably a good place to be if you're just, you know, kind of the homegrown astronaut waiting for your turn to go on this space. So that's not a bad thing. This multiple players thing is going to be important. Private, public partnerships. NASA has gone to the you know, they've done a lot of these different things, and a lot of these people are depending on NASA money to get their chops up. So it's okay. It's fine. And, some people didn't get the cut. Some people did. I'm not negative on it. I think it's great that we have these multiple players. And, yeah, you're going to have faults. You're going to have explosions. It's going to be, quite a sky show one way or the other. So, and Alon says the same thing. Don't know if it's going to work. We'll give her a shot.
Your take on our getting to the moon with Artemis or anybody, is it going to happen and when?
Oh, I think we're back to China. No, I think that the country to watch now is China. This is a saga of space race. We're going back to Sputnik days in my mind. People send me emails. They hate me when I say that. I see space race. I see the kind of communism, socialism, capitalism running ragged on trying to pull together a space program. And right now, I see China as a leader. And it's going to overtake the United States if we're not going to be pumping in money, if we're not willing to accept failure. And how does the public think about, America's space program here in the United States? So, we got some cruising for a bruising, in my view.
Cancel, Leonard.
Yeah. Well, before we got on the phone here, we've always talked about economics. And when you add in just the state of America in the now COVID, post-COVID, whatever it's going to be in the next year, it's amazing all these things happen in 2012 or 2021, given the COVID experience. My God, we did it. Landing on Mars and all these spacecraft that got shot off and doing amazing things at asteroids or attempting to, and in the middle of all that COVID thing, and we got Biden. One more guy I got to listen to on the presidency. I've gone through a million of these people. I think I started thinking about, did I? 46. Where was I? Who was the president in 46 when I started out on this grand adventure of being a human?
Wasn't it Truman? Or did Truman come in?
Truman in 46.
Because we're both 46.
All I remember is watching Eisenhower in the Oval Office with a nose cone in the Oval Office. It was the first return nose cone from space, and they were all excited about that. And that's when I really linked into the space agenda, back then with Eisenhower. So I've gone through a lot of these folks. I'm kind of keen on saying NASA today, they keep talking about continuity of purpose, and I'm worried about constipation of purpose.
Well, I don't know how to respond to that.
But you do the economic thing.
Well,
give me the world. Where are we with the U.S. dollar?
Well, okay.
How much money we got?
Well, we're still the international transfer currency, although that is threatened. I just pulled up our national debt clock. So,
Is it still ticking?
It's still ticking very, very rapidly, faster than my heartbeat. And it's our national debt is $29.3 trillion and rising at the moment. But if you go down, if I can find it real quickly, the unfunded debt, and I don't know how quickly I can find it, but it's way too high. And our spending is more than we're taking in, because that's why we run a deficit all the time and are now. So what can we afford? Well, we afford a lot because we deficit spend. And, the keep interest rates down at close to zero, although they claim they're going to raise them three times in 2022. That's going to impact an awful lot of people. So I don't know. I think we're not living within our means. If a family tried to do this, we'd be out on our ass and foreclosed and everything. But a family, as long as they abide by the law, can't print money. you know, if you try to print your own money, your life will be taken care of for you, but you may not like the habitat you get. But the government can just keep printing the damn money. So I think it's a problem, and I'm on record for maybe the last 8 years saying that one of these days it's going to impact discretionary spending in space and investment. But so far that really hasn't
that's
happened.
That's a good thing to bring up.
But it hasn't happened yet.
The space program is discretionary spending.
Uh-huh.
It's just, it says what it is. It's discretionary. That means you don't even have to do it. I mean, you know, if you got to cut bait with a bunch of projects, I mean, you know, here's Biden trying to do infrastructure bills. I mean, if the bridges are collapsing to the Kennedy Space Center, it's hard to launch something. You know, so there's going to be priority picking. And, but I do think, you know, getting back to China, the political wherewithal through China of pushing the buttons on their dominant role in space, and not just civilian, you know, or a military, whatever, civil military, is going to become more creative and dominant. Not only this year, we got two guys out there, you know, doing spacewalks this morning on their space station. They're gluing that thing together. It'll be up and operational by 2022 unless they lose somebody or something happens. They're going to have a lot of missions next year. And so that China space station is going to be there. And they themselves already say, well, we don't know if the U.S. is going to have a space station, Bucky.
Well, they're going to maybe have private ones. I have a caller on hold, but before I go to the caller, I just want to say that the key that people should consider, and you can put your own spin on it. I'm not telling anybody to accept my spin, which is really skeptical. But our national debt is about $29.3 trillion. But here's the problem. Our unfunded liabilities, which includes Social Security, Medicare, and a bunch of other stuff, it's $161.8 trillion.
Yeah.
So that's how out of whack the country is. And the more we spend, the bigger and crazier that becomes. So you can deal with it by trying to inflate yourself out of it, and we're seeing some of that right now, and it's miserable for a lot of people. And maybe you can deal with it like a third world country and just devalue your currency and start over again, which would not be very healthy for the U.S. You can default on national debt, which would not be heavy, would not be healthy for the U.S. Or you can just ignore it. And will it someday implode on us? My hunch is yes, but I don't know. I don't know. So, Leonard, I'm going to turn you over to our caller, okay?
Yeah.
Hi, caller. Welcome to the day after Christmas 2021 with Leonard David. Who are you and where are you, please?
This is John in Fort Worth.
And welcome back to the show, John.
Yeah. Well, we were talking earlier about the Artemis and all that sort of thing. It looks to me like what we've got at the moment is kind of a Rube Goldberg plan. I mean, on the one hand, we have SLS and Orion, a more traditional NASA program. Then we have SpaceX with their use of the Starship, a version of the Starship, as a lander. I mean, and that has to go through a lot of extra launches and stuff to get it up there and back and all, where you really need, you know, what we really needed was the Block 2 SLS and a reasonable lander, or we need a full-fledged, as you say, Starship-based program. But instead, what we have is this weird kludge of the two.
I agree. I'm not sure how it's going to play out. I don't know. What's your guess?
I don't know. That's a good point. So, well, unless somebody goes with, well, I guess they'll probably go ahead with this as far as it'll go. I mean, if SpaceX comes through, I mean, Starship, you know, is, well, I mean, a lot has got to happen with this. I mean, in addition to the basic, you know, ship, they also have to have their refueling concept on orbit, too, which that's really something not tested as well as with Starship itself, you know. So NASA, from their point of view, I guess at this point, don't trust Starship as a way to reenter the Earth from coming back, so they want to go with a more conventional Orion capsule for, you know, just confidence level things, I guess. So I guess at the moment it's going to continue as it is, and given that SpaceX seems to do things on with a lower budget than any other contractor can do, it might make sense they'll just continue with it, but it's going to be kind of interesting to see it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just keep coming back to 3, 2, 1, you push the button and we'll see what happens. SLS could explode on launch. They're hoping to go next year. That's been delayed. Alon's probably, Starship's been, we'll see how it shapes up in the next few weeks. You got the FAA there. You got all these other kind of ancillary issues that are still being sorted out. So, I'm trying to find an escape pod out of the confusion. And the one thing that's still hanging there is lunar exploration. And getting to the moon next year is going to be, I think, the year of the moon, because we've got multiple countries going back to the moon. China's already there, even on a Farsight mission. Right now, that Chang'e 4 is doing pretty good in their little rover. India, we've got Russia attempting their own robotic lunar lander. We've got Japan is going to come into the fold. We've got a multiple number of private public partnership missions to the commercial NASA deal. For these private companies to show their stuff. And we'll see. But I think the moon's going to be much different next year. That's a little bit of looking into the future, but it's, we'll see how many new craters we put into the moon. I just don't know. But I think next year is pretty much the year of the moon. It's going to be landers, private sector, and doing some pretty impressive experiments. Get to know the property. And,
yep.
And also CubeSats. We've got a number of missions orbiting the moon with lasers and some other really high-tech gear. That if this water resources is really on the moon, we're going to nail that thing down. I'm still in the as a reporter on the skeptical side. We don't. The data doesn't support the amount of water-rich craters yet. We'll get there. And next year is kind of a turnkey moment.
Yeah. Well, another thing is, of course, nobody's mentioned yet is the successful launch of the James Webb Space Telescope the other day.
Yeah. Oh God, I'm still breathing hard. I live up here in the mountains, and we had to get extra oxygen. I tell you, that launch, that Jim Webb Space, I kind of got rude. I always call it the Just Wait Space Telescope, the JWST. And here we go, and it really took off now. We've got 29 days of terror. You got the Mars landers that go through 7 minutes of terror. We got 29 days of deployment in route there.
The tricky part's still coming up, I guess.
Yeah, huh? Well, that's, there's a lot of gotcha moments here. And I'll be honest with you, I lived in D.C., Washington, D.C. for about 30 years. And one of the early meetings I went to was something called the Large Space Telescope, beyond Hubble and where we were going. And I sat in a room with contractors, industry contractors, talking to NASA about how easy this was going to be. $10 billion later, they basically, I'm not going to say lie, but, contractors say, well, we work on all these NROs, spy satellites, and we know deployments, and we know this.
They exaggerate a little.
Oh, my God. I heard it all. And here we are, finally, at $10 billion en route to L2, and we got 29 days of terror to come. And but I'm telling you, my wife and I were breathing heavy. That long.
Well, let's hope it works out. It could be very interesting if it works.
It's going to be more than interesting if it works. And it really is going to be the classic eye-opener. The one thing, God, I'm going on here, I'm sorry. The one thing that happens in these damn telescope launches, NASA and ESA and everybody's got to get into this mode of promising you the face of God. You know, that you're going to see unbelievable things with this new telescope. And I went through that with Hubble, and it got on station, and it was out of focus. And I tell you, I was at NASA headquarters and running around trying to figure out why they had, they went through hell, literally, trying to figure out how to defocus that Hubble into its correction. And that was a major effort. You've got all these, I don't know how many points of failure there could be, but there's a bunch in there for the Jim Webb Space Telescope. And so I just hope it gets there, because it really is the introduction to exoplanet detection, and then we get into the search for life, and we're going to start carving out these planets and figuring out what's in the atmosphere, and it's going to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, it'll be. And I guess the other aspect is being launched, assuming it's successful or whatever, it's there. That means they'll free up some budget, I presume, for others, unmanned space projects or even manned space projects, because it's taken up a bunch of budget for quite a while.
You're right. You're right on. I mean, we've had cost overruns, and this is where NASA, you start looking at SLS, you start looking at Perseverance rover, you start looking at a lot of spacecraft that are already in trouble with budget, and I just hope the money is there to support them, because the end product, if it works, everybody's going to forget it cost $10 billion when they start getting the imagery and started getting all the scientists totally beside themselves on what data they're getting. It's a rough hole, but I'm back with David. Money is money.
Hey, Leonard, I want to switch your topic while John is still on the line.
Yeah.
So listeners, what you don't know, and I know, is that Leonard sent me a list of possible topics to talk about on the show today. So we're doing pretty good so far. We're following his list, not in order, but we're following him. But Leonard, John is our resident really, really expert, but OCD, if you know what OCD is, on Tic Tac, okay?
Yeah.
And so here's what's happened in recent, and I know this is on your thing too, and I know you pay attention to this because of your interest in it, like my interest. So they've got a new committee being formed by the Air Force, and I'm pretty skeptical that we'll ever get anything realistic out of that. But we've got this new organization being formed by Avi Loeb and his group. And Avi's coming back on the show. That'll be his fourth visit later in January to talk about his Galileo project. What the hell is going on here? And I don't think Loeb and these guys would put their name on something if they didn't think it might be fruitful. And that might be better than what the Air Force is looking at. What can you tell us about it from your perspective?
Well, okay, from my, I guess from a reporter perspective, this is probably the most, I don't want to overblow it, but it's a sleeper story that could have tremendous impact on society. I'm not even sure what the hell's going on here. I follow it pretty close.
So do we on the space show, and so does John.
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing, Avi, I think in July, announced the Galileo project.
Right, and he's coming on in January.
Yeah, well, from then on, it's been a cascading thing of really upbeat stories coming out of the Pentagon, people taking it serious. And we're now, the New York senator, what's her name?
Kristen.
Gillibrand.
Yeah.
Kristen Gillibrand, yeah.
I mean, we'll see where this plays out. This just got put into the Defense Authorization Act, and she's pushing the buttons on that damn thing. The thing, I tell you where I am. It's a weird conglomeration of things. I grew up in San Diego in the 40s and early 50s, and I had George Adamski coming down to Palomar.
Yeah.
You know, he just got back from Venus, you know, and so, you know, I'm kind of, you know, I'm not tired of the whole thing, but I'm wondering whether this UFO scenario is totally different than UAP. I have a problem with the crossover. I'm not there yet. I love Elizondo and Chris Mellon are doing great, you know, kind of inside ballpark
right.
of work. But I'm not sure, I'm still not there, that we have a crossover between, you know, it's almost easier to accept that some alien folks have come in trapped and crashed and burned up in Roswell or where they ran around in Illinois or, you know, wherever it is. It's almost easier to accept that compared to what the kind of UAP somewhat nonsense that's going on in the community of UAP experts. I mean, I got people that are into some kind of religious, you know, kind of, you know, foment, standing out in the desert and seeing things, and we got we got people paying money for books, and you know, I mean, there's always been a cottage industry on what people probably sense is real, which is we are being visited. And now, whether the UAP thing is part of that, I'm not there yet. I've looked into this quite a bit over the decades. And there's some problems there from a reporter standpoint of trying to be objective, trying to be, okay, what's the data? And I think that's where Avi Loeb's going, which is, I think, one of the biggest things that happened this year is Avi getting involved in that. You know, and yeah, you bring in Harvard and you bring in all these experts, and I think Elizondo and Mellon are part of that
they're part
Galileo
of the,
project.
Yeah, they're part of Galileo too.
Yeah, and so we're gonna,
that's interesting.
Something's going to happen here, and you know, but one of the things that I really found intriguing by a reporter that I don't think anybody ever read his thing, he had a pretty cool thing about a project that the Navy, I'm going to mischaracterize this, that there was an actual test program that was going to challenge pilots, Navy pilots, to do laser kind of simulated objects. And I always found that intriguing, and I don't know enough physics. Nick West? Who's the guy that's the kind of a naysayer on all this? There's a guy that's doing a lot of work on taking those videos and trying to parse them out. And, you know, everybody hates him because, you know. but, you know, so we have this kind of carnival. It's a carnival of people that care, people that see things, people that I think are milking the public for money. And I think there are, you know, charlatans in this, and I think we've got to be careful. But at the end of the day, something's going on. And, man, would I love to write that story about the truth. What is it?
Well, do you think the performance stats that they give us of these Tic Tac things are legit, or do you think that this is all a sham?
What does the listener think?
What do you mean? You mean John?
Yeah.
He's a true believer.
Okay.
Well,
but that's not fair. He's a true believer. but he's factually and substantially well educated on the subject.
But thing is, though, is that I've been very interested in the whole issue of military engagement on this subject, which goes way before 2004 also. So, I mean, what I think you have to get about this is, and what is pretty well revealed, is there was some kind of a faction within, even within the security establishment, that was pushing this idea, I think, that led to things like Elizondo and Mullen and all this. I mean, because if you look at the thing is, it starts off this Tom DeLonge thing, you know, who's kind of a flaky character. Okay, I got that. But why are ex-generals that were in the right positions of the Air Force meeting with this guy before he did all this stuff? I mean, you got a guy from the Space Command, you got a guy from Wright-Patterson's R&D effort. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me that they'd be talking to him if there wasn't some, you know, and then you've got senators involved, you know, going back to Harry Reid. I mean, you know, powerful senators, right?
Yeah.
And Stevens and Inouye and Glenn, you know?
Yeah. No, there's something there, and it's really, could be a breakthrough story for, I think, next year. Some of this has got to come to a head tomorrow, you know, next year.
I don't know. Do you ever, Richard Dolan's an interesting figure that follows this sort of thing, and I kind of like kind of his style on the ones that he points out that, my thinking is that the government has known about this stuff for a long time.
Yeah.
But the problem is, initially, for a variety of reasons, you get into what they are, that they decided to deep six it and keep it very quiet and basically disinform the public about it.
Yeah.
And the problem is, after this many years, 70-plus years, how do you change your story?
Yeah.
You know,
well,
and not look like a complete liar, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, but the government, you know, aren't we used to them?
What are they going to do? Have the president come out and make a statement? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So they're doing it gradually, I think. I think they're just throwing enough things out there now, piece by piece, you know. Let this come out, let that come out, and they're letting the public wade into it rather than jumping off the high board.
Okay,
I think that's what I think is going on.
I've got to think there has to be some kind of entity, and where the hell that is that entity that allows this strategic thinking to let the public in on something that could be mind-boggling or religious upsetting, or you're back to some basic worries that some people have always thought that, you know, are we alone? It's so corny now. Are we alone? Well, how crowded is it? I mean, how many people are flying in?
Hey, Leonard, would you think that if there's anything to what Loeb and others are talking about or Tic Tac, that it would be a threat to humans on Earth?
I don't know. I see polls, all kinds of polls, and I don't know. It depends on what day it is. If it's a late Friday on a press release that aliens are among us, it might not get picked up. I don't know.
But what is your personal opinion?
Yeah.
Are you concerned that it would be a threat because they're so much more advanced than us?
You know, I think you got to take the pulse of the public at the moment. And look at the disarray in our whole psyche on the planet. I mean, this is a planet paranoid. You know, that's what we are. And to throw in, I just don't know. You know, I'm curious myself. I look at a lot of sociology papers and, you know, what impact would it have. I'm just a reporter. I don't know. It seems to me I'd be a little worried that we have a full story of what incoming alien intelligences have impact on the Earth, because I don't think it's just one thing. I mean, this is the Star Wars.
The question is, what do they want to have? What impact do they want to have if they're here? I mean, if you assume it's real as a discussion point, we don't know what their motivations are. And also, even if they aren't, quote, hostile, they could still have a big impact that could be harmful to us if they're not careful. I mean, you know, just you see what I'm trying to say. I mean, if you're dealing with something that's much more powerful than us in some ways.
Yeah, maybe if they're ethical, they could clean our government out for us.
There you go. Mike Masters, I think, is an anthropologist. I've did some review of his book, and I'm not sure we should discount time travel. that's us coming back in time.
That'd be interesting.
Trying to understand what, you know,
my favorite
archaeologists,
subject.
They're gathering data. I don't know how well we able to pull off the civilization. And,
that's my favorite subject, even more than Tic Tac, but that's even harder to get people to comment on the space shuttle.
Well, we're off into some other strange.
Because I've had physicists on from Lawrence Lab and others, and I ask them about time travel, and, you know, time travel is going up to the top of a mountain in the Colorado Rockies, and you'll go faster in time than if you're down here at sea level in California.
No wonder I'm in trouble.
So,
well,
John, do you have anything else? I want to clear the line if somebody else wants to talk.
I guess we don't want to get too deep in this, but like I said, the whole thing also rates into, you know, based on our known physics, this shouldn't be happening. That's the only thing I can say on that side. I just want to emphasize I understand this, but on the other hand, we have observational data that's kind of Trump's theory. So anyway, I'll get off here and see what anybody else has today.
Let's see
Thank
how
you.
Jim Webb Space Telescope does.
Thank you, John.
It's going to give an observational misunderstanding about our own universe. So,
listeners, John is already off the line, and you can call us if you want to talk to Leonard. 1-866-687-7223. So on your master list here, UFO, UAPs, a mess or a message coming. We're still a mess after talking to you for 20 minutes on the subject.
Yeah.
So is that that's a fair assessment?
What? What was that?
You have another caller. Good afternoon, caller. Welcome to the show. Hey, you got to cut off your computer, or I get to cut you off. You get to make a choice. Hello.
Well, that's a tough choice.
Yeah, I know.
It really is.
Go for it. Who are you, and where are you, please?
Yeah, this is David in beautiful sunny Glendale, Arizona.
Ah, welcome to the show again. How you doing?
Good, good. Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah to both of you.
Long past, but we'll accept it.
Well, better late than never. A couple questions, really focusing around Elon Musk. First of all, did either of you watch the podcast that the Babylon Bee did with Elon?
I watched it and sent it to about 5 billion people. I'm sorry I didn't send it to you, David. You weren't on that list, but I figured you'd watch it anyway. But, yes, I...
Oh, yeah, I nailed it right away. There's a lot of wisdom in that podcast.
Leonard, did you watch it?
I'm not sure I saw that one. I saw something on PBS that I thought was one. And also I watched one of the things that really impressed me about Elon. He was on the National Academy of Science kind of website that they were talking to him. And, you know, his ability to know so much is pretty impressive. I mean, metal alloys. I mean, he's talking to engineers at the National Academy of Science about how, you know, stainless steel works. You know, it was pretty cool. And I must admit, this guy, early on, people were worried that, who the hell? This is a PayPal guy building rockets, and what does he know? And when you really listen to him get into the details, he's done homework, but something else. I mean, there's some other stuff going on there. So, yeah, I'm sorry I'm getting away from you.
Well, the Babylon Bee is the political satirical group that he sat down for.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, it's exceptional. You should
send me that. I didn't get that.
You should see that.
Okay, send me that.
Yeah, you can find it on YouTube fairly easy under their channel.
Yeah.
One thing that Elon said that surprised me is, he went to preschool at a Hebrew school.
Ah.
So maybe that's where he learned his inquisitiveness.
Yeah.
We can only hope. One thing he did mention, Leonard, is it explains to me what you and David were talking about earlier on how the younger generation doesn't like Elon. Elon considers the woke mindset a virus for the mind. And if your kids are anything like mine, they've been brainwashed with wokeness.
Yeah.
And I hope someday they'll wake up. They'll wake up and snap out of it.
Yeah, I'll go for that, but I'm just reiterating. 3, 2, 1, you push the button, it's got to work. And we'll see how this is going to come together.
Well, no, Elon, that's not Elon's paradigm.
Well, okay. Well,
Elon's paradigm is
part of his paradigm.
Let's push the button until it works.
Well, you know.
And if it blows up a dozen or a couple dozen or scores of times, we learn, we fix, we build, we try again.
Yeah.
And that
sounds like NASA.
Different than the NASA mindset.
Oh, that sounds like NASA. I mean, I'm old enough to know everything that NASA did, and that's exactly what NASA did. And, yeah, at much greater expense, and we'll see. He has to fly, and he's going to blow stuff up. He's already talked about it. It's fine. And he's shown us the, guiding light on failure and how you push beyond that, veil of failure into success. So, yeah, I'm with you 100%. But at the end of the day, we have, I don't really care if it's Elon Musk. I don't care if it's NASA. I don't care if it's China. Where are we going in space? Where are we headed as a species? It is not dependent upon any one of those groups. It's going to have to be a philosophy. It's going to have to be something that it doesn't depend on these groups. We have to have multiple access routes.
Well, for the most part, in my opinion, NASA's become a fossilized bureaucracy.
And I got my rock hammer right here.
Last question for you both, and that's just to pick up on John and Fort Worth's favorite subject. Which will be a bigger reveal in 2022? That aliens exist or that the national election was stolen?
Oh, there's a toss-up.
maybe the alien stole the election.
Yeah, I go for that. I go in the middle.
I don't know. Listen, given that so many of us, and this is a serious comment, so many of us, and myself included, no longer trust a damn word out of the government, and for me, this is totally bipartisan. I wouldn't trust it if it was a Republican or a conservative, and I don't trust it with these clowns that are in there either. If they came out tomorrow and said, we know that these are from Zeta Reticuli, we've been in contact with them, they will soon meet the American public and the world at the United Nations, and we're glad to present them, I'd think they were scamming the hell out of us and wouldn't believe a word they were saying. So I think the credibility issue on whatever is said regarding ET and Tic Tac and all of this is really going to hinder whatever is released. I have a lot more confidence that Avi Loeb's group would be credible than anything that the government would put out. And the government has only itself to blame for destroying credibility. And when I grew up, and Leonard, I grew up around the same time you did. We're the same age, except I was in Tulsa and you were in San Diego. Maybe I was just a naive fool. I believed in our government. I trusted in it. I served in the Navy during the Vietnam era because I trusted in it and I believed in it. But that was the beginning of the shattering of my experiences and my credibility with the government. But now it's gone, and I don't honestly know how it could ever come back. It's been so wiped out, and I'm pissed about it. And yet I don't know what to say. So if they came out and Leonard, they introduced you to an alien, I'd trust you that you did your due diligence and it was really an alien and not some kind of a robot. But other man, David or whatever, I wouldn't believe a word. And I think there's a lot of people around that have had their credibility with the government challenged, no matter what they tell us. And again, I'm sad about it, and I'm angry, and I'm pissed off about it.
Well, I had an alien from Zeta Reticuli that actually brought into our house a ballot box, which I think is secure.
Well, listen, maybe the Zadians,
yeah,
if that's how you say it, have credibility. I don't know.
Yeah, but it shifted us to a much broader picture. I mean, we really are on an epic journey here of understanding how many planets in our universe have potential alien life and civilization and techno signatures and whatever's going to happen. So to get to your listeners' question there, I think 2022, on the other hand, I said this in 2021. I thought this was all going to come to a head about are we alone. So I'm hopeful that Jim Webb, working with the Hubble, the exoplanet detection numbers are going to go up. We're going to find Earth-sized planets around all kinds of places. We're going to start carving out the chemistry of their atmospheres and understand, industrial waste or, they're on cell phones or whatever the hell they're doing over there. But I do think we got to be careful that we don't get sucked up into one alien life form. We're going to have all kinds of variations on theme. And, if some of those folks have ventured out.
We must be equitable, right, Leonard?
Well, yeah. it's an amazing time to be alive, but, it's always an amazing time
to
be alive.
Well, I really hope that the alien story, if there is a story there, becomes black and white while I still am conscious and not senile and still around to know
the
truth. This is really important to me. I really want to know the truth, and I hope it comes out in a way that I can have credibility and belief and faith that I am not being shined on and being told the truth. It's a story I really care about, and I just hope that it comes out while, I'm still kicking and screaming, and I know which way is up and down.
Well, David, I'm going to sign off with a final comment here. If you hear about the aliens arriving on CNN or NBC or ABC or even your favorite PBS, assume that it's all lies and the truth is the opposite of what you just heard.
The truth is out there, right, David?
It won't be delivering it to us on our TV screen.
No, they'll just take over the airways. And if you remember seeing the movie Mars Attacks, and everybody's welcoming in the Martians on the top of that building in Pahrump, Nevada, you'll just hear them in the atmosphere. And then the ray guns will come in and zap them.
There's something coming, though. I'm with you. I think next year is going to be another reveal. We love the term reveal. We're going to get revealed about this or that.
David, you got to remember when you call back, we are a 501c3 nonprofit, and we do our best to avoid partisan comments, even Babylon Bee-like comments, although that interview, maybe I'll put the link to the interview, since it is a good interview with Ilan. I'll put it up on my summary sheet, or someone else may want to post it to the blog of this show. Leonard, you do have wild cards listed on your list. What's a wild card?
The wild cards. I don't know. There seems to be some. Well, it may be tied a little bit to the UAP or UFOs or something, but I think this idea that we need to ride rockets into space is pretty lame, the way we've got it set up. I really think we've got some new engines and rocket capability coming. Moving around the solar system is going to be much more important and faster of all things.
So we might see nuclear propulsion, you think?
I don't even know if that's it. Maybe that's bogus. I don't know. I see much faster travel. I don't know if you've ever gone to the Dayton, Ohio, and stood out there on the beach and looked at Wilbur and Orville takeoff point. It's pretty mental thing to look at them riding down a rail and they had all of, bunch of seconds they gathered to fly. And you think about where we are today, it's all corny. At some point in the future, it looks goofy. And the way we're doing it now is goofy. I love this group Spin Launch in New Mexico of using a giant centrifugal force machine to launch payload. I think that's the beginning of something we should be keeping an eye on. I think there's some laser propulsion off the Earth that is really kind of interesting. So, and this UAP thing, if it's, you know, depending on how we carve that out, there may be some propulsion secrets in there that we may be able to tame, that it'll be, you know, much more radical than what we think of today. But, you know, radical today is passe tomorrow.
You have another caller on hold. Hi, caller. Welcome to our program today. Who are you and where are you, please?
Hey, David. This is John in Fremont, California.
Okay, go for it.
Hey Leonard.
Hi.
I was wondering if you had seen this open access article that is about to be published in the New Space Journal. It's mission architecture using SpaceX Starship to enable a sustained human presence on Mars.
Yeah, it was authored by the good friend of mine, a woman at NASA Ames, Heidman,
Heldman. Jennifer Heldman?
Heldman, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a good friend. I wrote her a note and said, hey, you know, I love this article. This is great. Well, go ahead and do the premise of the thing. Tell people what it
was
about.
Yeah, I think it's kind of building on Zubrin's Mars Direct, where they're talking about putting infrastructure on Mars to establish a permanent presence, and they start with a couple of uncrewed starships with equipment for ISRU, and they suggest using the technology that we're going to learn from here, coming up with Viper on the moon.
Yeah.
In 2023, using the instruments that they have on that vehicle to suss out water and ice and how deep it is, and then drill down to it. And then they suggest using some existing technology that we're using at the South Pole to pump water up. And I'm excited about the possibilities that Starship opens up, because a lot of people now are thinking about, what can we do with it once the infrastructure is in place? Now, we haven't seen a flight yet.
Yeah.
But
there's a drawback.
So the next window, I think this is the window for this next year is a window for launching to Mars, and then 2024 will be the next one.
Yeah.
Do we think that he'll be ready to send an unmanned vehicle, Starship, to Mars then, or are we going to have to wait until 2026? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think in that paper, I think she said NASA better get its payloads together. We got to start thinking this is going to be real. Let's get the payloads together to maximize use of Starship. And we communicated. I actually just got an email from her back and forth in the last week or so. And I enjoyed the paper. I said, you know, my only criticism was I don't see any comparison with this paper with SLS if it works. I don't care about the cost. I'm just saying payload to Mars to do these kind of experiments. And, I didn't see that in there. And I think, to be fair, you got to look at, okay, what's the other avenue here, even if it's totally out of whack economically. Zubrin and, he did a lot of early work on methane production, and all the elements are there. It's just getting there. And I'm back to what you said. It hasn't flown yet. And so, if it's flown, and it's, even if it's flown, it's got to fly again. You know, there has to be some kind of track record on these things if you're going to pile on a bunch of survival gear for colonization of Mars. And, you know, I'm segueing here, I'm sorry. Ballast Marineris. This new study that came out just like in the last week of water in that canyon is really provocative. And I haven't seen anybody attack the data yet, but it's from a Russian instrument on the European... I always forget that name. It's a an orbiter around Mars that Europe's running, and it has spotted, you know, this water reservoir. And NASA itself is doing a lot of really creative work on identifying these water locations. So, you know, it all plays together. You know, we're doing the science, and, you know, you got multiple spacecraft, and next year, you know, ExoMars goes, European Space Agency is launching with the Russians a lander and a rover, and it's going to be pretty capable, but, you know, we've got quite a number of assets at Mars or in orbit that are locking this story down. So, you know, I'd love to have it all tied together, but, you know, again, I get to this damn, you know, the Starship is wonderful. It looks great in pictures. And, you know, the people that are making the most money on space exploration now are the artists. You know, they're drawing all these wonderful things and how easy it is, and they're landing over there. And we've got, you know, the hardware's got to come together. And I have no doubt that Lon is passionate and ready to go for multi-planet species and all this other stuff, but you know the hardware's got to fly. Let's see how it reacts. But I'm with you. The story is evolving, and it's really telling. And don't discount Mars Perseverance and its actions on Mars right now. And, you know, that could be the breakthrough story for next year is discovery of life on Mars. And even go look at Curiosity and where it is on Gale Crater up on that damn mountain. That thing, I look at those pictures every day. And, boy, it's pretty compelling what it's seeing with the sedimentary layers. And you know, that story could break next year.
Well, we live in interesting times. Hey, David, are you still trying to get Musk to come on the show? If he came on the Babylon Bee, he should come on the space show.
Well, Babylon Bee has an audience about 50 million times larger than the space show. Yeah, I would. I no longer have a current email address for him. I guess I could try sending him a Twitter message. He seems to communicate that way a lot from what I hear him saying. Yes, I will try again. I was planning to try after the holidays.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Hey, thanks.
And Happy New Year to everyone.
What, Leonard?
No, I'm just thanking him for the call.
Okay. Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Talk to you later.
Okay. Listeners, the line again is available if you want to use it, 866-687-7223. So a little bit of clarity on my skepticism on credibility for government. You know, if a NASA scientist or somebody is giving a talk on something and they've got research and stuff to back it up and it's credible, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about these big, giant policies and statements they make and other things that they tell us that later on turn out not to be true, and they're discredited, and they don't ever do anything about the discredit or the people that make these statements. And UFOs and Tic Tac are certainly in that category. But you all know the news stories that are in this category, and they're aided and abetted by news networks on both sides, depending on who's in the White House. And I just, they've just made a whole bunch of skeptical people out there that were not skeptical before. But if I'm reading a paper with a NASA scientist based on, you know, credible research from instruments on Mars or something, I'm not putting my skepticism in that category of hearing from government people. So I hope you guys out there can use some discernment and critical thinking and differentiate what I'm talking about. You have another caller, Leonard. Are you ready for this one?
I don't know.
Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you and where are you, please?
This is Marshall.
Hi, Marshall.
I'm going to try to be real short here. What is the value of positive PR? We, you know, keeping good public relations seems to be one of the things that Elon is working real hard at, and he doesn't seem to be able to buy it. So what's it worth?
That's a good question. I don't know, Dave, what do you think?
He buys it with, it depends on what community you're talking about, because Elon goes all across the board with people that are fanboys, and anything he says breathes and excretes as pure gold or Bitcoin, and the other people, you know, detest every single thing that he does, and even his exhalations are contaminating the atmosphere of the planet. So it depends on whether you're on the side that can readily accept and identify with and like the fact that he has PR and puts out information, or whether you think he's just a diabolical liar doing evil things to people and the planet and to his workers and stuff like that. So I guess the value of PR to him is how it impacts SpaceX. It's a private company, but he does raise money from time to time from large public people. So having a good image makes it easier for him when he needs to go to the trough to raise money. The same thing, it helps to maintain Tesla stock price, although that's been going down the tubes lately, but probably because more of inflation and other reasons in the economy. There's no value with his PR, because I am able to do due diligence on what Musk talks about, and I'm able to make up my mind whether what he's saying is huff and puff fluff or there's something of merit to it. So I always remind people, Starship hasn't flown, same things Leonard's saying. Let's see what it does when it flies. Let's see what the economics are when it flies. Same thing with SLS, by the way. And I don't really care what he may or may not tweet on Twitter, unless it's like applicable to his testing schedule or something that has substance behind it. So I think he probably wants to maintain good PR because of the companies and the positions and the things he advocates. So I would imagine it's valuable to him, but does he put a cost on it, a dollar price per line of PR? I haven't a clue. I don't know how he would value it. Maybe very different than what I've just said.
Well, the fact that we're talking about this for a pretty good length of the show, he's got his own PR machine going.
Absolutely, even though we're talking at times critically about him.
Yeah, no, it's all part of the deal, you know. And, you know, I mean, he's sort of the bad boy of space, you know. It's kind of a very interesting place to be, because you can be critical. And, you know, meanwhile, he's got to make sure he's going to be friends with NASA, because he's got to work with NASA on... and they have tremendous success now with the Inspiration 4 flight, with the four citizens in space that don't touch the controls, just sit there and float around in there. And he's done, he's moved the needle. And
so,
it's great. I don't have any issue with any of that.
Let me say another thing about Musk and how I am able to come up to my mind. So in conferences years ago that I used to go to, and Leonard, you were at many of them. Some of them were the SmallSat conference in Utah. But Musk used to show up at these conferences too.
Yeah.
But also SpaceX had a really big booth, and it was loaded with what they call booth babes, okay?
Yeah.
And part of what they gave out a whole boatload of stuff, SpaceX. and they gave out a boatload of SpaceX T-shirts. So I was a total greedy pig, and I built myself a great selection, because they're all the same, collection of SpaceX T-shirts. So I wear them all the time. I wear T-shirts. I'm a T-shirt guy, and the weather in California can allow it. And I go to the supermarket. I go to the post office. I go wherever I go, the gas station. Someone sees me wearing SpaceX. I go to 7-Eleven to buy something or a lotto ticket or something. Do you work for SpaceX?
Yeah.
No, I'm in the space industry. Do you know SpaceX? Do you know Elon Musk? He's been on my radio show. Where can I hear it? What's your radio show? How do I find out about it? I have yet to ever meet, in the 20 years I've been wearing SpaceX T-shirts, a negative thing about space. When I go to the supermarket checkout and they have young people working on the checkout or older people working, they are inspired in their lives to do something different and better by Musk and SpaceX.
Yeah.
And it's never ending. I can walk down the street in a SpaceX T-shirt, and I will have 10 people cling on to me to find out if I touch SpaceX somehow, so they can touch me. And I don't get that with other T-shirts that I wear. Unfortunately, when I wear my Space Shuttle T-shirts, I don't get that.
Well, I wear your T-shirt. I need a new one.
Was anyone out there reaching out to touch you because you're wearing a Space Shuttle T-shirt? But with SpaceX, I'm telling you the truth. So his image out there, we talk about maybe some younger people don't like him or this or that or all this negative chatter on space and space tourism. I have to tell you, it's overwhelmingly, from my little experience, very positive, but not just positive. He's an inspiration to people that need inspiration in their lives.
Yeah.
And it's how do you value that? I don't think you can value that. It's amazing to see, and I see it all the time. And Musk in their lives and SpaceX in their lives, just ordinary folks, it's a huge friggin' deal, and they want to be part of it somehow.
Yeah. Well, the more success he has, the more people want to line up and be part of it, of some kind of, again, dream machine operation. And on the other hand, you know, I think you could almost make the same case for somebody wearing a NASA logo T-shirt.
No, never. I wear NASA T-shirts, too. I wear a NASA jacket when I walk my dog in the cold weather. And nothing comes to me wearing a NASA jacket. It isn't even a tenth of what I get wearing a SpaceX emblem.
Okay, well, that's a good... Well, that's
but again,
there's still... I mean, the litmus test for SpaceX, or not, that's not the right word.
It's not a T-shirt,
really,
that's for sure.
You know, it's the underdog kind of element with SpaceX, that he's showing the government how to do it. And I think, you know, with the temperament of the times of today, you know, government is like, you know, okay, what are they doing now? And, you know, the guy's doing stuff, SpaceX, so... I think there's a little bit of that. I mean, it's just, you know, he's still, you know, he says these things, and he's an underdog somehow, and he's got, you know, we have yet to see AI, all this fulfillment of some of the other stuff, and driverless cars, but I think he's put this vision out there, and I guess to get to the original question, you're probably right. I mean, look at the value of his PR by us just talking about it.
Here's another factor. Okay, so I live in California, and people will tell me, God, I really love it that he stood up to California and got the hell out of here and went to Texas. I really love it that he kept the Tesla plant open, and he wouldn't let those people tell him to shut his Tesla plant down. I hear that from people. They admire the lack of... the better word is gumption, for standing up kind of to the man, you know what I mean? And they really liked that defiance of his, and it kind of energizes them. you know, at a time when so many people probably think there's a heavy weight of government on them for this, that, and the other. And so Musk is a lot of things to a lot of people. I don't see or hear much about Tesla when Musk comes up. It's always about SpaceX and always about his independence and standing up and not succumbing to things that we mortal people are sort of compelled to succumb to.
Well, he's got his big thing now is going to be the FAA and getting Starship off the ground and
right in Texas.
How
yeah.
That's all going to come together. So he's standing there in front of the man from a flight thumbs up, and he's already got in trouble for violations of things, and so is Richard Branson. And so the FAA is sort of a man in space. Whether they should be or shouldn't, probably another show.
Well, we'll have to see. But that's how one of the tools I use to kind of judge the kind of PR image of Musk. And I know my sample size is ridiculously small, so it's insignificant across the broad scheme of things.
At least you had a T-shirt on.
Yeah, but it's interesting to see it play out, and it's very predictable.
Yeah, well, no, we're on to something. It's all good. And, you know, just fly and let's sort itself out.
Get it flying, absolutely. Marshall, what else is on your mind?
I just feel so good that a little one-sentence question, and you guys talk for 10 minutes. That's great.
Sorry.
Anyway, until next time.
Okay. Thank you. Happy
Thanks
New Year to you, Michael. Bye-bye. Listeners, we're still available if you want to get a little whack in with Leonard, 1-866-687-7223. Also, email is available, drspace@thespaceshow.com. We have talked about first contact and ET and stuff, but not in the context of SETI, but on your cheat list that you gave me, you did shout out and call out SETI. What do you see the role of SETI in all of this is? It didn't even come up once in our discussion around searching for extraterrestrial life.
Well, I think Avi Loeb has done kind of a service in my mind. The SETI Institute, I love all those people. I've worked with them for decades. Joel Charter, Seth Shostak.
Right.
They're amazing scientists that are involved in this institute. But I think he's kind of shot off a bow shot, you know, about his views about searching for other intelligent life. And it's just another alternative, and I think it's very popular. I think Avi Loeb is kind of a work in his own, regime. He's very interesting and entertaining. He's got great stories. He's a good storyteller. He's going to has to come up with goods on the Galileo project, so I think he's marching forward. But I think it has done something to this traditional, study community to make them mad, make them upset, and boy, if anything I love is, I love that. I want to have people upset about some traditional approaches to study, and somebody comes in with a whole different view of how to approach this. Now, whether obvious, off the mark or not, it doesn't matter. I think he's really expedited discussion in an area that needs much more discussion, because I think we've gotten ourselves into a kind of headphones on Jodie Foster sitting by the VLA or something. And I think it's time to broaden that discussion, and he's done it.
He's done it.
He's done it, and let's see where it goes. Whether he's successful or not, I don't know, but we're there. I do want to get into something, and I know you got your little list there because we talked about it earlier. I think, we have the overview effect that we all know with Frank White. He's done a great job of pushing that that icon statement, but I do think we're into an undertow effect, and and that is about space in general. And this is one of my big worries for this this year has been the what I think of as the Russian crash test dummy antics that they perform with their anti-satellite test. I think in November or something like that. But, you know, this whole space debris thing is something I've been following for most of my career. And I thought last year was bad. it's bad. This is becoming something that I hope your listeners spend more time watching, because it's not good. This is not a good story coming. And who knows? You know, we're going to have a loss of life up there with the station being hit by something. But this Russian anti-satellite testing, it could be a forerunner of some other kind of tests from India and some other things that are happening. They've already done an anti-satellite test. So is the U.S. There are people trying to block these anti-satellite testing. And it shows the vagaries of, of the Outer Space Treaty, and we're going to mull over weaponization of space and militarization of space. You know, we're getting to debates and we're getting to space law and all this stuff. I think we're in trouble. I think, we're going to have, and Elon is part of that with Starlink, and thousands of these satellites, and then we got OneWeb, and we got Jeff Bezos with his Amazon, mega constellations. We got some problems, and every orbital debris expert that I talk to, and there's a lot of them, but there's some really, really some of my favorites. We're heading for trouble, and something's gonna give here, and unfortunately, it's gonna take out something.
What about this UN General Assembly Committee for International Norms? Do you have any faith in that?
I have trouble with, I think everybody, space lawyers, the UN is such a clunky kind of operation, and it's gonna take. We'll all be, DirecTV will be down and satellites will be blown out of the air. And by the time they come up with, who's in charge of the committee. So, yeah, we're going to have to move faster. And the White House, just in the last, I just got something the other day. I'm not even sure what it was. I got invited to something to participate, but it looks like the White House is gearing up for another space debris, a bunch of sessions that they're trying to at least accumulate all the data and get all the worries together and, all the concerns and, we'll move forward. But, boy, we've been talking about this for decades.
Yeah, since long before the space show started in 2001.
The best news that we got in orbital debris is Don Kessler and the Kessler syndrome is still alive. He predicted this is where we're headed. And there are people that are trying to finesse that syndrome and do some more things. But the more mega constellations we have up there, I'm not sure where we're going. And I think anybody that contributes, like the Russian crash test dummy effect, is ridiculous at this point in time. And
well,
to be held accountable.
While we're at it, do you see anything productive coming from the National Space Council now that we've had at least one meeting?
I thought the first meeting was a disaster. I think it was so political and so, I'm sure she's trying to get her oar in the water and all that. But I thought the vice president did a good job of, speaking into the microphone clearly. I didn't see anything in there that was compelling to me. It's revisiting issues. The Trump administration through Pence, I'll give him credit. Pence was out there. Now he created the Space Force and all these other things are going on. But particularly Scott Pace, I give
high grades to him. Yeah,
Scott as he ran the executive secretary of the, I think that was his title, like director of the council, and a magnificent job in that regime, the Republican regime. But we gotta keep an eye on that. But that first base council meeting, no, I thought that was I fell asleep.
Do they contact you for critique or for input?
No.
You're not?
I almost wrote something, and I went and checked with other space policy experts, and I said, was this a sleeper or what? And I think everybody kind of go, well, that was a pretty lame duck thing. I didn't want to get into it. We'll see. I hope she does well. She got to pull this stuff, And frankly, the events of space are going to make that council thing, because they're going to have to cop up stuff and get the Biden administration in gear and step with some edicts. But, at the end of the day, way too late on orbital debris.
What do you see for 2022? I know you've alluded to breakthrough issues and this and that over the last hour and a half, but does anything stand out on its own that has your attention or your following or any individual for 2022?
I think the idea that the moon is coming back in vogue by India, Japan, and Europe, and the Russians, things are going to pick up fairly quickly. And if the Artemis one mission ever gets off the ground, that would galvanize some support for getting back to the moon in some time frame. Next year, China will, at the end of 2022 is what they're promising. It's going to be a pretty active year for them for launch rates to the space station that they're building. They got a couple modules that they're going to attach to the core module, and that's going to build up. So they're going to be busy. And so I maintain that China is probably a story to watch. They're going to be an active player. And Mars will come back into vogue through the European Space Agency launch of ExoMars and their rover and the Russian lander, and that's going to happen.
What about James Webb? Do you think that's going to be a breakthrough right away?
Well, I'm just holding my breath that all the, if the mirrors didn't crack on liftoff or, whatever, I don't know if we're going to hear something bad, or they're on their way. L2 is great. And working with Hubble, which has gone through some hiccups lately, but it looks like it's back in shape. The two of them going in tandem at new targets of opportunity. Wow. I'm sure the astrophysics community is just can't wait. And the exoplanet life detection folks are going to get a new whiff of fresh air about where they're headed.
I have an email question for you. We haven't gotten too many emails today. It's all been phone calls. So this is Bob in Seattle. And he says, you haven't really called out or single out very many entrepreneurial space companies, but do you see any of the smaller entrepreneurial companies doing great things that get notoriety in 2022?
Well, the Rocket Lab folks, and every time I hear this Peter Beck, I never met this guy. I love this guy. I never met him. I'll meet him sometime in the future. He's just, wow, that's moving along. The neutron rocket concept that he's unveiled here the last few weeks ago. Relativity Space is another one I'm hoping does well. Astra, they've had their Kodiak launch success and failures, and they seem to be moving forward, so that's a good sign. Yeah, the private, and also China has got a pretty significant number of what quote unquote we would call private sector in communist China, private rocket groups. and they seem to be hit and miss, but they're moving along. I do love this spin launch thing. The whole idea about coming up with new ideas on access to space. We're in the Wright brother time frame, and let's move on to some other novel launch concepts. I hope they do well. Very impressed with their potential. So I think the private sector, NASA, I know some people hate NASA, they've discovered pretty good private-public partnerships, and they're lining up with a lot of different companies. You're going to see a lot of these private companies with their lunar landers, and we'll see how well they do. And it's another forward movement in the private sector opportunities of doing space exploration. So, yeah. You couldn't ask for more. I mean, we close out this 2021 deal. Wow. You've got to be kidding. That's a lot happened. And, are we going to, what's the mirror going to be like for 2022? I don't know. I'd stand by for discovery. So we may have some overwhelming new finds. And why wouldn't we want that if we spend all this money? Let's get it on.
Listeners, there's still a few minutes left. If you want to try to get a call in before we end our program, 866-687-7223 or email drspace@thespaceshow.com. Leonard, have we missed something? Have we omitted anything? Should we have talked about something that we haven't talked about? And usually Barbara comes on the phone. How is she doing?
She's doing good.
Is she there to say hello to?
Yeah, I think so. I'd say the only other nagging thing is the military space effort by all countries to start looking at cislunar space as a new warfare agenda, and that one bothers me a lot. We're into a, in my view, we're into a situation where we've seen this before with air, land, sea, ice, polar. This is all warfare. Again, we're back to planet paranoia. And now we have what looks to me like a fairly significant strategic opportunity that's being questioned by some, being supported by others, that cislunar space is a military domain, and that goes all the way to the surface of the moon. And you start thinking about, if you try to be futuristic, you try to start thinking about, we got trade routes between the moon, and if the water ice is there, and how do we make fuel, and who's going to have to wipe the land over there where there's more ice, and bring in the Artemis Accords, roll those things in by the U.S., and people are signing up for that, other countries. And so I don't know. I kind of got into this peacenik role of mine a long time ago, and I'm just probably more paranoid than most about the weaponization of space and how we're going to continue this decades and decades of paranoia into cislunar and the moon surface itself. So I'm not happy with that.
You have another email that came in, probably be the last one of the day. Doug says, what do you think will be the short-term and long-term effect of SLS policy if Starship successfully achieves orbit?
That's a good question. I don't know how NASA would feel about it. My guess is NASA would support them in some way, as backup. I don't know. It also depends on how SLS does. This thing is a mega project with a lot of engineers, and they've done some cutting-edge engineering. If you really look at the SLS, it's a marvel in its own, like the Starship. And, I don't know. I think we're going to have to see how these things fly this year, next year, and we'll go from there. But, boy, I love the fact that we're, you know, launching multiple opportunities into space. And like I said, if somebody comes up with a giant rubber band somewhere where we can all hurl ourselves into space, I'm up for it.
One other question just came in. Wow, 2-hour show. Paula's in New Mexico, and she says, I'm sort of surprised that nobody has really mentioned the goal of space settlement. Leonard, do you think 22 will be a revolutionary year for actually starting space settlement?
Well, we're there. I mean, we've got settlement. We've got a called the International Space Station. The Chinese have a settlement. It depends on how you just define settlement. And then we have Axiom and a number of these private space groups that want to put up their own independent private space stations. So, yeah, let's see how this unfolds. And it's great that they're doing these things. It's just multiple faceted space activities that all of us, I think, have been hungering for decades. So, and then I think there's a big issue with, okay, what do we do with this International Space Station? You know, we're going to put it up there for, I think it's Air and Space Museum ought to buy it and have space tourist flights go to it, because I really would feel bad about that being dumped in the ocean. That's a lot of hardware.
Can you imagine what their museum budget would be to maintain it and have people going to it?
Oh, it's a dollar. It's a government asset. You could buy it for a dollar. I don't know.
Yeah, but you probably couldn't maintain it for a dollar.
Well, you can't maintain it, but you could fly by it. I think space tourists need some place to go.
Well, you have to keep it in orbit then.
Well, you can go stop at the Hubble, take a look, go over to the space station. There it is.
If it's Tuesday, you must be at the space station, right? And Wednesday, you're at Hubble, and unfortunately, you don't get to get out to James Webb. But
well, yeah, you're going to have to go to L2, but who knows? A new propulsion capability. Refueling at L2 for the Jim Webb, it could last for a decade.
Well, they made it possible to do that, so.
Yeah, I a lot of opportunity. It's a great time. How do we afford it? I don't know. I watch the Chinese. I think they're coming on big. A lot of opportunity. They may be doing Mars sample returns.
Here's one that came in. They're never going to leave you alone. What time is your bedtime tonight, Leonard?
My bedtime.
We're going to be on until your bedtime. Yeah. Fremont John, he called earlier on the phone to talk to you, says ISS is an outpost. Settlement will come when humanity can have children in space settlements.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm ready. It will happen. It's going to evolve. I was so fortunate in my career to go to Princeton and be a part of the Gerard O'Neill conferences that he put together on colonization of space. He was a real thinker, a real a doer. He was a physicist. He had the design. He had the wherewithal. Great guy. I worked with him on the National Commission on Space.
Well, John's an O'Neillian, so he probably appreciates what you're talking
about.
No,
he was out there. He forged the future that we're still aspiring to. So Tanya's still with us, and Tanya. Yeah.
Do you have any plans to try to go on a suborbital space flight?
No, I'm afraid of heights.
Well, you ride in an airplane.
I'm afraid of airplanes. I'm
at
9,000 feet here all day. Come on, that's high enough. I saw Comet Leonard last night.
Okay, and just to put all things aside, it's not named after you, is it?
No.
Okay.
No.
It's been cloudy here. I've not
still
seen
my
it.
Name.
I've not seen it.
It's a great view by Venus, and it's pretty compelling.
Yeah, we haven't had clear skies, so I haven't seen it. Leonard, is there anything else we should say before the new year from your perspective?
Well, where the BS stops, the booster shots begin.
I won't ask you to explain that.
How do I know? I write these things down.
Listeners, his articles and stuff you can find on Leonard David. There's two D's in that. .com. And you can see his articles in space.com and lots of other places as well. And we look forward to hearing from you and talking with you next year. And we'll kind of gauge and see if we're still concerned about these issues next year, or if the temperature has risen, or what's happening. And maybe some new issues will come to the forefront.
Well, they will. And keep up the good work there. I think what you're doing there is a great service. And keep us all recorded and hold us accountable.
absolutely. And listeners, again, before we go, this is the last, Tom Olson is the last show of this year, and he is Tuesday with his annual space review, mostly of commercial space and new space. And then we have signed off for 2021, unless you want me to resume a program Wednesday night or Thursday night on predictions, forecasts, or something kind of fun and end of year, beginning of next year. Do let me know if you want that, either via blog post or email to drspace@thespaceshow.com. And remember, our annual campaign goes through the end of this week. If you're interested in the 501c3 tax status, I need to or should have the funds before the end of 2021. We do need your support, and it's not free to do shows like this one. And while Leonard is appearing without cost, in fact, all of our guests appear without cost, there's a lot of cost in putting the show together and making it live so you can talk to him. If all you want to do is listen to a podcast and hear these guys but not be able to talk to them, then, you know, you've got lots and lots of choices out there. But if you want to talk to them and engage with them, like you did with Leonard today, there are very, very few choices. And, we hope you'll support us and help us continue with that through 2022. Leonard, my regards and Happy New Year greetings to Barbara as well. And stay healthy and safe, and keep breathing that fresh mountain air up there. And we will talk, hopefully, many times in the coming year.
Okay. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. And listeners, back again on Tuesday with Tom Olson. Goodbye from Leonard, David, and the Space Show.